Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest, and part two of The Howling from the Woods is getting closer. Subscribe if you're new, make sure you smash that thumbs up, and let's get spooky. As the unknown being approached the flimsy shack, I expected to meet my end. I stared at the phone in my hand to see if my final message would be sent. As the door flew open, I braced in preparation for a horrid figure. Would I be eaten alive? Would my body be used to lay eggs in? What awful fate had I stumbled upon? "You're awake," an excited feminine voice announced. Near-death experiences made your mind do funny things, but I swear to you, when I heard those words, I almost muttered, "Tom Howard, you sly bastard." I guess on this day, in my darkest moments, I fall to humor as my crutch. I was beginning to worry that I did not make it in time. A woman comes bursting into the shack and sits right in front of me, inches from my face. She is pale, with hair as white as the purest snow. Her eyes shine with an emerald green that could pierce the soul. She is tall, maybe 6'3". She looks like she could be some Olympian. Starting to break out of my daze, I begin coming up with more logical thoughts. "Where am I?" I ask, scooting myself a couple of inches back. "My house, of course. Where else could I take you?" She stated it as if it was the most obvious thing in the world. "Right. And who are you?" The second I ask the question, her face falls a bit. "Have my statues decayed over the centuries? Your people have long called me the Goddess of the Forest, but I prefer that you call me Teresa," she said, holding out her hand. I take it, and she gives me a firm shake. "The Goddess? You're real?" "Of course I am real. Well, I am not an actual goddess, but I most certainly am real. If I was not, could you feel this?" She grabs my ankle and lifts my leg up an inch before letting it go. I don't know for sure what that proves. The mind can play sensory hallucinations. "My legs! I could feel them! I could move them! How? My back was broken when..." My thoughts returned to my rescue. "You were the one that saved me." Teresa gives a proud smile and a nod before her expression changes to one of sorrow. "I could not save your friends, though. I am sorry. I have failed to protect your kind." "So, they are really gone? You could not heal them like you healed me?" I asked, risking the last grain of my hope being crushed by the answer. "No, I cannot revive the dead. As I said before, I am not truly a goddess. That is just what your people thought I was. I am closer to what you would call a wyvern or a dragon, I am." She stops herself as she notices the tears flowing from my eyes. "I am here for you if you need anything." She moves to sit beside me and holds me in a hug as I grieve for my lifelong friends. We sit there for hours as everything catches up to me all at once, and I let everything out. After some time has passed and my sobs had subsided, she speaks up again. "The soup I am making should be well done by now. You should eat. You haven't eaten in a week." "Food does sound nice. Wait, a week? I thought I only had slept through the night." I was startled at this realization. Does my family think I am dead too? They must be worried sick. "To be precise, 11 days, but that did not seem important," she says, bringing in two wooden bowls filled with herbs and chunks of salmon. She picks me up and somewhat forcefully sits me down at the small table next to the window. She excitedly rummages through the dresser behind me before pulling out a fork and a spoon and placing them both before me. "I have not had company in a long time, not since my kin divided. I've had so many questions." She takes the chair opposite of me hastily and tries to control herself before bouncing up and down to sit in. She takes a deep breath and regains her composure, trying to return to being polite and regal. But I am sure you have more questions for me, so I shall let you ask first. 11 days? Has anyone tried coming to look for me? I see a bit of confusion on Teresa's face before she appears to have a realization. My apologies. I forgot that days are much longer time for humans. That would be alarming to you, yes. Your people have searched for you, but I have guarded them from harm. No one else has been harmed by the Wolfnir. The Wolfnir? Is that what that creature was called? There are more than one? Every answer I received seemed to only open more questions. Oh my, I am getting ahead of myself. Please forgive me and let me explain. Yes, the creature that attacked you and your friends is called a Wolfnir. It is the twisted alchemy of the ones who hunt my kin. We do not know how they are created, only who creates them. We call them the Underdwellers. Creatures with forms similar to yours that came from the underground. They seek to conquer this planet in its entirety, but your kind are already here. The Underdwellers are not as resilient as their Wolfnir. They fear your weapons and your numbers. If you were to go to war with them directly, they would surely lose. Teresa takes a pause to sip some soup and make sure I do not have any questions. The Underdwellers have taken to hunting my kind as a way to gain the advantage on humanity. They wish to harvest our scales and bones for weapons, and our blood for potions. Our scales and bones cannot be scratched by any earthly material or any normal means. The Underriders are clever, however, and created a poison. They use this poison to target our weak points. Our eyes, when they are open, the openings of our ears, and any place where a scale has shed or been knocked off. Centuries ago, the last of my kin decided to abandon our dragon forms and disperse. Our plan was to hide in remote areas until the day humans discover the Underdwellers, or the day the Underdwellers launch an attack. We each pick a spot and told no others about it, to protect against spies or torture. We can disguise ourselves as any form of human, so some took to the cities and lived amongst humanity. We cannot expose our existence, however, or we run the risk of being found and hunted. We cannot trust humans to refrain from hunting us for their own gain like the Underdwellers. Teresa stares at me intensely to emphasize this point. So why are you able to trust me? I asked honestly. I will kill you if you betray me. She says this with a pleased look on her face before bursting out laughing at my apparently hilarious expression of fear. I only jest, although you may be with me for a long time. What was your name? She gives me a sheepish expression, realizing she had never asked me my name. Oh, it's Toby. Toby, and Teresa. I like it. Teresa takes a moment to admire my very average name before she remembers what she was talking about before. As I was saying, the truth of it is, Toby, you may be with me for a very long time. The rest of our lives, even. She says this grimly. Our lives? Haven't you lived for centuries or millennia? Humans don't live that long. I replied, puzzled she wouldn't already know that. I know, Toby, but you are not human anymore. You are somewhere between human and me. Teresa is remorseful as she explains this to me. Even though I know what she is about to tell me is going to be bad news, her care for my emotions still touches me. You were in a very dire state when I was able to make it to you. You would have not survived with human medicine. Your heart was pierced, your lungs were crushed. You were on the verge of death, and I did not want to allow you to die. I gave you my blood. You gave me your blood? Why? Yes. My kind heals extremely fast, especially compared to your kind. Our healing power comes from the blood, but once the blood is given, its effects cannot be reversed. You inherit some of my power. You heal as fast as I. Your body is stronger and faster as well. And your lifespan is expanded to that of one of my kin. Teresa puts her hand over mine as she says this. You cannot shapeshift like I, and you will not ever age. You could return to your village for a decade, maybe two, but eventually people will start to notice that you are not aging. You will have to leave and never return at that time. If you are discovered to be unaging, you will be thought to be one of my kin by the underdwellers and hunted down just like me. Teresa's head sinks and she begins to cry. I give you my deepest apologies for this I did to you. You will have to leave everyone you know behind. I know how horrible it is to lose all of your family. I know. I could not think of another way to save you, though, and I could not let you die. Teresa starts to weep more intensely. It is obvious she suffers greatly of her solitude. She feels guilty for giving me the same fate. As I try to process the news I have been given, I can't help but worry about the pain Teresa is feeling. I do my best to be kosher instead and try to comfort her. Teresa, it's okay. You did what you thought was best, and I am grateful to be alive. You saved me, and I will always appreciate that. You have still given me time to be with my family, for that I would not have had if I died yesterday. 11 days ago. Even when I do have to leave them, they will know that I am leaving alive, and that is a much better thought than them discovering me out dead in the woods. And when I do have to leave town, I could come live with you, right? So I won't be completely alone, and you won't have to be alone anymore either? I squeeze her hand reassuringly as she works to compose herself. Right. I'll take good care of you. We will be the best of friends for centuries. She shakes my whole arm up and down, trying to shake my hand in an affirmative way. She finally dries the last of her tears and looks back up at me. My dearest apologies. I said I would let you ask all the questions, and then I went ahead and stole the conversation anyways. Do you have any more questions for me? I look around the shack and take more notice at the odd amount of modern items. Where do you get all these things from? Oh, these? These are all gifts from you and your kind down below. They are all so thoughtful and sweet, like the curtains for my window. It was always so bright out in the middle of the day, but now I block the sun out or the cold in winter. She walks over and pulls the curtains for emphasis. Wow, all this time I thought it was some town leader who would take the gifts, like plain Santa Claus. Santa Claus? What is that? She furrows her brow. Well, he is a legend of a jolly old man who lives on the North Pole. He makes toys for children all year round, and on Christmas Day, he brings presents to all the nice girls and boys and gives the naughty ones coal. There exists such a human? He sounds very amazing and kind. Teresa's eyes sparkled as if she herself was a child on Christmas Day. He's pretty great. I'm confused though, Teresa. If you can shapeshift to look like anyone and you're trying to hide yourself as a human, why do you look like that? Like what? She recoils as if I offended her, which I might have. So, first off, you are very pale, like ghostly pale. Not many humans in the world are as pale as you are, and most that are that pale live up north. Like Santa? Yes, but not that far north. Also, your hair is pure white. Most humans who have pure white hair are very old, but you look about my age. Teresa instinctively starts covering her hair with her arms. Is there something wrong with me? She asks, looking mortified and hiding herself behind her arms. No, you look fine. It's just, you kind of stand out. Not many people look like you. So if you were trying to blend in and hide it, it would seem like an odd choice. Oh. Teresa lets her arms slide back down to her side and starts fiddling with her fingers. Well, I did not get to see many humans before I had to take shape and hide. In fact, was when your village first settlers were surrounded by those rabid wolves. I picked what looked like me before and I have kept it ever since. She gestured towards her armor and sword in the corner of the room. In my true form, I have white scales, so I wanted to be a human with white hair. I was a lucky one in this regard. The other colored dragons, like purple, blue, and green, all mad because they could not keep their original colors. But there are no green skin or green-haired humans, she giggled. Not naturally. But if any of your green or blue or whatever colored friends are still around, there are hair dyes for almost any color you could think of. Wait, why did you point to the armor? We're talking about your scales. Don't tell me. Really? That would make them so happy. And you are correct if you are thinking that my armor is made out of scales. My scales. My sword is made out of one of my baby teeth. She quickly rushes over and picks up her gear before handing it to me. This giant sword is a baby tooth? It's almost my height. I lay the sword down on the table, trying to figure out how large it actually is. It had to at least be 5 feet. Well, it is made out of my baby teeth. My actual tooth is much larger, but we had to cut it down and shape it so that a human could hold it. The same goes for my armor. It was all made out of one scale. She holds it up proudly. Her armor shines a brilliant white that goes completely unblemished. So, Teresa, where did you learn to speak English? I find myself asking, breaking the momentary silence. My speech? I learned most of it a few centuries ago before I came here. The people I hid near spoke it. One day, though, I heard about a new land being discovered, and I thought maybe it would be safe from the underdwellers. So I snuck on a ship that was sent to sail here. Teresa speaks thoughtfully as she recounts her adventure. That would explain a lot, I accidentally mumbled aloud. Explain a lot about what? First my appearance, now my speech. Do you have anything else to critique while you're already on the topic? Teresa begins to glare at me, folding her arms. Oh, gosh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that. You just have a bit of an English accent, and you have some mannerisms that are odd to me.
I have an English accent?
You just said I am speaking English. How could I have an English accent when speaking English? She looked even more miffed than before. Before I could answer, she raises one hand to silence me. Her eyes dart back and forth as an intense look washes over her previously cheerful face. A familiar growl is echoed from the other side of the wall. Teresa waves her hand to draw my attention. She points to me, then points down, to which I assume means stay here. Slowly, she raises up and picks up her sword resting against the wall. As she pulls it up, it makes a subtle clang against the shield resting atop of it. But that was all the noise needed to make the beasts outside go into a frenzy. In an instant, the shack was shaking on all sides and threatening to collapse. Teresa bolts out the door in a blink, slamming it closed behind her, and the rumbling of the shack ceases as the Wolfnire chase after her. I peek out the window to see if she's okay. 3 Wolfnir circle her as she stands unarmored with only her sword. The Wolfnir all charge Teresa at once. She charges back at one facing her and dives underneath it, splitting it from jaw to tail. Blood rains down upon her as she rises back to her feet and lets out a battle cry. The Wolfnir, unfazed, continue their charge. She stepsides one, cutting deeply into its sides, but the second creature grabs her by the ankle. The creature slams her against the ground over and over until she goes limp. As it realizes she is no longer resisting, it lifts Teresa to its maw, ready to indulge its kill. I sit frozen as my only protector is about to be eaten before I notice Teresa's sword still firmly in her grip. Teresa takes her opportunity and slams the blade through the skull of the Wolfnir. Its body falls limp and she pries herself from its grasp. Just as relief is about to wash over me, suddenly my view turns in the snarled teeth, and I feel the wind from a Wolfnir's jaws snap shut. In my fixation on the battle, I lost track of the other beast. I screamed bloody murder as I backpedaled towards the wall. The beast slams its entire head against the wall, bending it inwards with each push before one final slam sends its head rolling to my feet. Teresa is standing in the doorway, coated in blood and breathing heavily. She stares daggers into me, and the being who once gave me comfort now has been replaced with that more resembled of a raging animal.
"I told you to stay put,"
she growls as she takes a step closer. She reaches her hand towards me and I flinch instinctively. She does not hesitate grabbing the Wolfnir's head and flinging it out the window where it splatters against a pile of rocks.
"Absolutely disgusting,"
Teresa mutters, staring down at the blood that now coated the floor. I get a better look at her and notice that she is not without injury herself. A gash has formed near the top of her forehead, and her sides are cut deep from where the Wolfnir picked her up to devour her. Her attention shifts back to me, but her expression does not soften.
"Come here."
Teresa grabs my arm and pulls me outside. My heart is beating a million miles a minute as I am pulled behind her. I hope to myself that wherever she is leading me isn't some execution spot for being more trouble than I am worth. Maybe she realizes I am too much of a liability and decided to get rid of me now. She takes me around the back of her shack, which I probably shouldn't call it that in front of her, and I notice we are still deep in the forest. We walk about 5 minutes before she leads me towards a small clearing where there is an assortment of things, human things, placed overlooking a steep cliff.
"Look, I learned everything else from you all. If you think I speak weirdly, you are to blame."
She points a finger towards the small campsite. I think for a second that there must be someone who uses this as their secret camping spot, before I notice the telescope is pointing towards the town instead of the sky.
"Wait, you're still on the topic of how you speak? That's why you're angry?"
I stare in bewilderment at Teresa, but she doesn't break her glare.
"I watch your village all the time during the day. I watch your gestures, your greetings, your goodbyes, and I even read your lips while you talk.
I can read lips very well. I have worked really hard to keep up with the new phrases and lingo.
That is not cool enough for you, dude."
"Teresa, I'm sorry. I don't mean to upset you. You speak wonderfully, and it is incredible that you are so dedicated to keeping watch over us and trying to fit in. If you lived with us, you totally would pass as a human, no doubt. You would just sound like an out-of-towner, that's all. Human language changes so fast, so the place that you learned it from speaks it a little differently than how it came to be here." As I try to mend the mess I got myself into, Teresa's body relaxes. She walks past me and up to the telescope. I do have to confess, I did not always have this, Teresa points to the telescope. "Telescope?" I answer uncertainly.
"Telescope,"
she says, sitting down and gesturing for me to come closer. "I only received this gift from your town only a short time ago, 20 years ago." She looked over at the telescope, wiping both lenses gently. "Ever since then, I have been trying to catch up with the human social interactions, but I don't know it all. I give it great effort, because I have long thought about trying to live with your kin. Even if it is for a short time, just to break the loneliness. Of all the gifts I have been given, this one is my favorite." Teresa places her hand on the telescope and begins looking through it.
"Wait, this came from our town? Let me take a look for a second."
I take a closer look at the telescope. It looks exactly like it did in the box. She has taken incredible care of this thing. I look over to the nearby tent and see there is no bedding or anything else inside it. Only 3 indents in the tent floor from a tripod. "Did the telescope come with the note, Teresa?" She lifts her head and looks at me surprised.
"I believe so. Unfortunately, it has rained on the night I went to retrieve your gifts, and I was unable to make sense of the paper left with it."
"That's okay. You probably wouldn't be able to read it anyways. My handwriting was horrible when I was little."
"You're... surely you must be joking. You are the one who offered me this?"
"That was me, all right. I had to beg my parents for months to get our storekeepers to bring one in to purchase. Then I had to convince them again to let me leave it for you.
when I first heard the story about the goddess and how she lives here, and I thought about what you must miss back home. I couldn't imagine being away from home for more than a day, much less 100 years. I wanted to give you that so that you could look back up to heaven, your home. I wrote my letter telling you that if you ever get lonely, that I will talk to you. I turned away from Teresa, now feeling embarrassed sharing my silly childhood thoughts. You really did all that for me? What a sweetheart you are. I never thought I'd get to meet the one who gave me the most valued gift. Thank you dearly, Toby. I feel myself blushing for my compliment, and it only gets worse as she wraps her arms around me in a giant hug. You kept your offer even after I so rudely never replied to your letter as well. I cannot keep mad at you after all that, can I? I apologize for getting angry with you. She lifts up and helps me get back on my feet. Besides, I must request a favor from you. Her expression changes from kind to serious again, and I worry that all is not actually forgiven. Sure, what can I help with? I replied, trying not to show any hints of uncertainty. Night will come soon. I know you only woke up today, but I need you to accompany me tonight. I will be hunting any Wolvenir that threatens the village. I am both shocked that she would ask me to come along to face those beasts, and absolutely terrified of the idea of ever seeing one again. No, I mean, wouldn't I be safer hiding in your home? I caught myself just before I was going to blurt out shack again. My sure home? Teresa raises an eyebrow at me. Unfortunately not. We have already been found here once. They could certainly discover us here again. My home is not fortified to withstand Wolvenir. I never had to worry about something being attacked while I was away before. I stood guard over you while you slept, but in that time the Wolvenir have grown bold. They are straying closer and more spread out around the forest. I worry if I do not intervene, they may attack into your village. Teresa pulls on my arm and we start walking back towards her shack. I use the time it takes to walk back to try and work up the courage to go with her. In the encounter we just had, all I could do was stand stunned or run. When we got back, I noticed something I missed on the walk out. 5 mounds of dirt laid on the side of Teresa's home, each with fresh wildflowers and a blank headstone. To the far corner is a pile of dried flowers along with some chunks of stone. Are those? Is all I could get out before I choked up. Teresa looks over at me and begins to pat my back. I did not think I could sneak them into your village cemetery, and I did not know any other place I could put them. Teresa speaks softly. I hope this is acceptable. I nod my head yes as I fight a losing battle to hold back my tears. Every time I see something that reminds me of my friends are gone, it feels as though they are being ripped apart in front of me again. The shock, the pain, the sorrow, the guilt, they all come crashing together to deliver the world's cruelest sucker punch to my gut. Why did their lives end and not mine? I should be dead, just like them. For what point am I alive? Why did any of us have to die? Just why? Some questions do not have answers. Some things are just. Some things just are, and it is not the fault of anyone. Some things are reasonless. Teresa comes back cleaned and fully equipped in her armor. I didn't even realize she had gone. I am responsible for your survival, but I cannot tell you why you were chosen to survive. You were the only one still whole when I reached you and your friends. Call it luck, or choose your own answers to your questions. Teresa hands me a dagger and 5 scraps of cloth. I took a piece of each of your friends' shirts. I buried them in the order so you could mark the graves properly. I hold the scraps to my left hand and the dagger in my right hand. It looks like the same material as her sword. My own answers? I ask, as I approach the first grave. Their life's ended, but mine has not, because I will live my life for all of us.
I place Marcus's cloth on the top of his flowers and carve his headstone. Here lies Marcus, a selfless healer who gave everything to save me. I should be dead, but I am not. I place Dex's cloth with flowers and carve on his headstone. Here lies Dex, a man whose love for all forms alive made him truly one with nature. I am alive for the point of making sure the tragedy that happened to my friends will never repeat itself. I place Mitch's cloth amongst his flowers and carve on his headstone. Here lies Mitch, a man whose greatest wish was to provide and care for his town. None of us had to die that day. If not for a hidden evil, we would all still be alive. I place Quinn's cloth with his flowers and carve into his headstone. Here lies Quinn, a bright beacon of hope for the future stolen from us too soon. So why? Because there are people I love that I need to protect, and I will protect them. I place Jason's cloth on top of his flowers and carve on his headstone. Here lies Jason, the best friend I ever had and a loving brother up until the end. As I finish wiping my tears, Teresa stands beside me. I like the answers you have chosen. I take it you agree to come with me tonight, then? Yes, I have chosen my answers. Now I have to see them through. I stand to face Teresa with a new sense of conviction. I can't change the past, but I can't stop this from happening again. I need to take action now and help Teresa. There will be time to mourn later. Follow me then. It's not dragon scale, but I made you something to keep you safe. Teresa guides me around the bend and reveals a set of gray armor. Wow. Did you make this? What is this made out of, stone? I did, Teresa exclaims proudly. I cut it from the same slab of mountain rock that I used to make your friend's headstones. I had to guess your measurements, but I think I did a good job. Put it on and tell me how it fits. I could make some adjustments if it's too loose or too tight, and I could smooth the joints out more if they feel rough. She watched in anticipation as I put the rock armor on. I thought for sure that this would be way too heavy for me to carry, but it feels oddly light, I say, slipping the hulking flab of stone that is my chest plate over my head and resting it on my shoulders. My blood has made you stronger. Even so, if it starts becoming heavy, tell me immediately. You only just regained consciousness, and I don't want you overexerting yourself. Does it fit? She gives the chest plate a few quick jabs as I ask. The impact of her punches still nearly knocks me to the ground, but my chest isn't caved in, so I think the armor is doing its job. It fits great. I don't feel a thing. Good. You may be stronger, but you are not any more durable. This should be too much for a Wolvenir to crunch, Teresa says proudly, admiring her work as I put my arms and legs into the suit. What do I use as a weapon, then? I actually have no weapon for you. I do not want you fighting. I just need you to keep close so I could keep you safe. You're kidding me. Shouldn't I at least have some kind of weapon just in case? Anything to defend myself with. If the need occurs, you could always use your shield to beat the Wolvenir back until I come to save you. Toby, you are not as strong as me. I do not want you to get into a fight you cannot win. I know you wish to avenge your friends, but tonight is not the night. Just please, stay close to me and stay safe. She stares intensely at me as she makes her plea, and I can't refuse. I don't really have much of a say in the matter anyways, do I? I can't make myself a giant stone sword. I'll play it safe tonight, learn, and then when I am healthy enough, I could join you in the fight. I give Teresa a nod, and though she still looks concerned, she returns the gesture, and we were off into the woods as the sun disappears behind the horizon. We start off the night patrolling around, but soon the howling begins. Teresa takes off at superhuman speeds towards the sound of the howling as I struggle to keep up. If she wasn't pulling me by the arm, I'd probably surely tripped or crashed into a tree by now. We make it to a steep part of the mountainside, We find the source of the howling to be 5 Wolvenir surrounding the shadow of a figure that is throwing them meat. Our arrival captures the attention of the shadowy figure. It slowly starts walking towards us. Teresa releases my arm and pats my chest plate to make sure it's not going anywhere. She quickly draws her weapon and assumes a defense stance.
"This is bad. Be on your guard,"
she whispers moments before the first Wolvenir turns its head towards us. The beast let out a bone-chilling growl, and the 4 other creatures lock their eyes onto us. In a flash, the battle has begun. The beasts once again charge our way. Teresa runs headlong to meet them, and in a blink is behind the pack holding the tail of one in her left hand. She yells as she throws the entire beast at the shadowy figure, who barely manages to dodge the improvised projectile. The other 4 Wolvenir encircle Teresa, and she stands on guard, waiting for the first move. The Wolvenir to her back attempts to strike first, but Teresa turns and thrusts the sword directly in its path of the monster's lungs. It skewers itself onto her sword, and she pulls her blade from the beast's neck before returning to her stance. From behind the shadowy figure, I see the tossed Wolvenir from earlier start the rise. It shakes its head, but instead of finding Teresa, the beast spots me instead. It breaks into a full sprint towards me and breaks Teresa's concentration. She tries to rush to intercept the Wolvenir barreling towards me, but the 3 surrounding her seize the opportunity. The one in front of her catches Teresa with a swipe of its paw and sends her flying into its accomplice, who slams her to the ground, pinning her. She stabs through the skull of the beast, pinning her, but now the Wolvenir charging at me is too close for her to reach me in time. I plant my shield to the ground and brace as best I can. The Wolvenir crashes full force into my shield and sends us both flying. I can hear the sounds of Teresa's struggle as I rise to my feet.
"Hold on, I'll be right there,"
she shouts in between the sounds of grunting and growling. I look over and see the Wolvenir rising to its feet again. I decide to take the initiative this time and charge the monster's shield first before it could get oriented. My shield slams into the beast and knocks its head into a nearby tree. It struggles to get back on its feet, and I use that moment to slam the Wolvenir's head between my shield and the tree. The beast let out a howl of pain, and I slam its head again. It grunts and collapses on the ground, and I slam its head again. I could hear the cracking of stone. With all my strength, I bring my shield over my head, and I slam it down on the broken creature's skull one last time. With a satisfying crack, the Wolvenir's skull caves in, and my shield breaks into multiple pieces. I hear footsteps rushing towards me. Before I could turn my head, I am swept up in a hug and spun around in the air. Teresa carefully sets me down with tears of joy running down her face, and she sprints past the Wolvenir corpses she left behind. She swings her sword with killing intent at the shadowy figure, but as it makes contact, both of them are repulsed from each other. Teresa goes hurling into the forest while the figure slams into the mountainside. The creature speaks a language unlike anything I had ever heard before, noticing me. It presses something on its neck as it casually steps towards me.
"What is the matter, you overgrown lizard? Stuck in awe by our latest technology? Yes, while you brutes rely on the same old tricks, we learn, adapt, and advance."
The figure's voice is hoarse, as if it had not spoken in decades. When it steps closer to me, the figure's cocky demeanor falls, and it sniffs the air.
"Wait, you are not a reptile at all. You are a mammal. A human. Why are you in the clutches of a lizard?"
The figure finally reaches me, stopping 6 feet apart, just barely in the moonlight. Its skin is sickly gray, and it almost looks transparent. Its eyes are milky white, yet they are focused intently on me. It had no nose or ears, just holes in its head where the nose and ears should belong. Its arms reach down to its knees and it stands about 5'10". Its body is covered in what looked like circuits and modifications. Its legs are largely mechanical and look hydraulic, while its arms look like Swiss Army knives.
Human, I asked you a question.
It hisses impatiently at me.
Why are you with the lizard? Do you even know her true form?
Yes, I know what she is. I'm with her because she saved me from your godless abominations. You killed my friends. You're the underdweller who created these things that killed my friends.
Underdweller. The lizard has already been spewing her filth and filling your head with lies. Human, my race has a much more dignified name. We are the Monumentals. We have existed eons. We are not here to hunt you, but to protect ourselves.
The underdweller looks off into the woods before approaching closer.
The lizards discovered our race centuries ago. They greeted them diplomatically and even welcomed them into the capital of our civilization. We trusted them to be civil, but when they laid eyes upon our massively advanced technology, the lizards determined us to be a threat. They laid waste to our capital, killed our leaders, and scattered us to the corners of the world. It was only when we discovered their weakness that we could counterattack. We drove them into hiding and then, satisfied, we returned to our domain as well. In that time, we opened the world to allow you to evolve and reach the top of the food chain. Now that you are so numerous, the dragons have latched a new plan against us.
The underdweller began to circle me.
Look at you. Look at what it dressed you to be. A soldier. The lizards want to use the humans as their own personal army against us.
They seek to eradicate us so they can reclaim their place as Earth's top predator and enslave the human race.
The thing stops in front of me, staring me down with those milky eyes.
No, you want to hunt them down so you can use their blood and bodies to make weapons. Teresa told me everything. You created these monsters. How am I supposed to believe that you are the victim here? I could feel my anger welling up.
I created the Wolfnir, yes, but not to hunt humans. I fight against the lizard. Look at what she can do. Thousands of years of advancement, and we have only begun to scratch the surface of matching her lizard brute strength. I am sorry about your friends, truly I am, but they were never meant to be attacked.
If she hadn't lured my wolf near to you, your friends would still be alive.
Stop it. You're not fooling yourself with that bullshit.
No need to be vulgar, human. If you do not trust me, trust in your own ancestors. In your history, when have you ever encountered a friendly dragon? In the knights of the old days, fight my kind to save your princesses? Or did they fight the flying scaly menace? Listen to me here, human. She is using you. She gives you her blood to make you docile, easy to command. She convinces you that we are the enemy. Then she sends you to your death to fight us while she laughs behind your back. Help me kill her. I cannot bring your friends back. But if we kill her, my Wolfnir and I will leave you to return to your peaceful life in your town. I will even purify your blood so that you could live a normal human life again. You will have saved everyone.
The underdweller is suddenly flung against the edge of the cave, with Teresa pressing full force against him. Sparks begin flying as Teresa is violently shocked, but she preserves through the pain, raising her sword blade up to the neck of the underdweller. A bright flash erupts from the underdweller's waist, and part of its mechanics fall to the ground broken. His eyes grow wide as the electrical field around him begins to fiddle out. I see his arm begin to swindle, but I am too slow to shout. With a gasp, Teresa's grip loosens and her sword drops to the ground. She stumbles a few steps away before collapsing face first on the ground. The underdweller brushes himself off and walks up to Teresa, pulling a glowing purple dagger from the slight gap between her chest plate and chos.
Lizards never learn. One step closer to freedom.
The underdweller turns Teresa over. His hand pulls her head to the side as he prepares to plant the dagger into her neck. Without thinking, I sprint full speed towards her. As the underdweller strikes, I crash into him and climb on the Teresa. His dagger is deflected off of my armor, and I notice Teresa's sword lying next to us. In one swift motion, I pick up her sword and swing it blindly behind me. The swing connects and the underdweller recoils, holding his torso.
"You stupid frickin' ape! Fine! If you enjoy being the pet, you can die with your master!"
The thing pulls out a whistle and blows a low rumbling note. Suddenly, the woods are filled with the howls of Wolvenir, and the underdweller slinks away into the cave. I pick up Teresa gently, placing her on my shoulder, and sprint back to her home. I place her on her bed and check her pulse. She's still alive, but her breathing is shallow and her pulse is faint. I have chosen to sit and protect her no matter what, just as she did for me. I hear howling and snarling all over. Only an hour has passed, but the Wolvenir had gone rabid after the whistle. Even from the cabin, I could see in the distance the orange glow of fire over my town. I could smell the smoke, the death. For the past hour, I could hear screaming from the town, but now, I only hear the howling. I remembered my phone and turned it on and tried the call, but nobody in my contacts list was answering. Even 911 was unavailable. I took a moment to look over the cliffside and everything was gone. All that could be seen was a few dying fires and the shadows of the Wolvenir stalking the streets, so that they could render anything they catch alive. I am terrified. Terrified for my family, and the well-being of everyone I had ever known. Terrified for Teresa and whatever affliction she is battling. Terrified of being left alone, the only one left. I guess this is why I'm writing this. I am too scared to stay alone. Teresa won't wake up. I've prayed to God, but he doesn't answer me. I know you can't help me, but please just talk to me. I'm afraid of being alone, and the howling from the woods is getting closer.